Accession number 9955, Reel 7.
Mr. Calvert, Reel 7. So you're about to go up to the line from Poppering into the Ypres sector for the first time. If you could tell me anything you remember about that first journey and the route you took and where you were going to, it would be very interesting.
We went along, there's a main road which went through the, well, I wouldn't say it would be a main, but a road which went through the German lines. Well, we followed that for so far, then turned off and went across open fields, and it was pitch black. And when I stopped while they made sure the direction was right to relieve the company we were taking over from, there was very lights going, and I thought we were nearly surrounded in the salient. And after a lot of hard walking, slipping and sliding with the equipment we were carrying and
what
other
were
things.
You carrying?
Extra can of petrol can, 2 gallon water. We're carrying that, and also some spare sandbags, full load of ammunition, 150 rounds, 125, I forget which, in your container, and then you had your rifle and your food and all, so it was fairly heavy going.
What were the ground conditions like?
Terrible. All shell holes, more or less. It had been fought over quite a few times, that area. And eventually we got to the trenches.
Were you on duckboard tracks or just going...
No, there were no duckboard tracks there. We got into the front line trench and took over from, I think it was the Scots Guards. Then... After all had been sorted out, sergeant came to me, "You're on sentry duty." So onto the firing step, he said, "All you've got to do is to look at front, don't move too much, and if you see any movement, unless you've been told otherwise, fire." And
was this in the day or the night when you got?
Early morning. About 2:30 or 3 in the morning. So I carried out his instructions. I didn't hardly move, and then as soon as it was stand down, of course, down I went, and someone took over and sat with the back to the firing, weather to the German line. Had the little piece of glass with a metal cover to shield it from the sun, and that was faced to the German front line, and you had to watch through that for any movement. A periscope type it was. Well, you was there for 1 hour and then you were relieved, and 1 hour each, more or less, so you could get 5 or 6 hours sleep at once.
So what were your first impressions of the front line? Was it the front line, or were you in a
reserve? Yes, the front line.
What were your first impressions of it?
Shocking place to be in. The there was a smell of death then. And I mentioned the smell and I said it's been fought over so much and there's so many dead here, buried, never be recovered, that that's the smells in the soil. And then, of course, I said during the daytime, get ready. If you hear a call, run left or right. He sends over what we call a Minnenwerfer.
I'll come to that.
Yeah.
What about, because we've got lots of questions about the actual trench life. What could you see from the trench through the when you looked through the periscope like thing, or at night? What could you see of no man's land and where you were?
During the night time, you could see follow the German line right round the salient and our own line. You could see the artillery flashes, you could hear the traffic, which always was a sense to me of wonderment. As soon as it was approaching dark, you could hear this rumble, and it started, and by midnight it got louder and louder, and then towards dawn it died away and all went quiet apart from gunfire probably. And it was our traffic and theirs moving up to supply the front line and the artillery with shells or whatever they needed.
What about you're looking out, when you did look out through the thing, what could you see of No Man's Land? What was the state of it?
All shell hole with rubbish there and broken equipment, all sorts of broken stuff lying around.
How far away was the German line in the part you were in?
About 200 yards.
And do you know, were there any landmarks near you? Because you know you were in the Ypres salient, but was there anywhere that you could put your finger on to let us know just where about this bit of trench might have been within the Ypres salient?
Well, it was not far from what was known as the Canadian dugout. And that's the only, everywhere else, of course I couldn't tell you unless it was Julian, somewhere near St. Julian area.
So you think it was somewhere near the Canadian dugouts in the St. Julian area?
Yes.
That's close enough.
That's
what can you tell us about the actual trench you were in? What did it look like? How deep was it? How wide?
It was about 7 feet deep. And then you had a firing step, which of course brought you well up to be able to see out and use your rifle and that. It was well made, but it wanted a lot of repair work.
When you say it was well made, what do you mean by that?
It had been well built.
Was it revetted for the sides?
Well, yes, and there were wiring to hold the bags back, being wired as well, but it wanted a repair work doing to it. But it was a well-constructed trench.
So it had wire. The wire would be attached to posts, would it?
Yes, driven into it. I think it was called revetting. They used.
What sort of wire? A mesh? Or
kind of a mesh wire it was. Just to stop the sandbags.
Was it all sandbags on the sides?
Yes. You had to, because it was a wet area.
So, although it was 7 foot deep, it wasn't dug down?
No, a lot of it was built up there because of the drainage problems.
So how far would it go down from the basic surface?
Probably a yard.
So everything else, the other
was built up.
The other 4 foot was built up?
Yes, it was like a built up like a miniature fort.
And how wide would that
as wide as you could keep throwing anything over to build it up. And
so some yards?
Yes, to stop the shells penetrating.
And would it be the same behind, the Parados?
Yes. Yes, that was also it had been in the I think the Germans may have held part of it, and the French had held it, and the British had it. So they'd all tried their hands, and when the Germans had it, they'd built it up facing us, and when we got it, we reversed it to build it against them.
What was the bottom of the trench like? Did you have duckboards?
There were duckboards there, and there were water underneath.
How were the duckboards fixed in? Were they just laid on the
bottom? Just laid on the...
They weren't on supporting posts?
No, just laid. And it had been dug underneath. And then that was thrown over to strengthen the trench.
Were the duckboards high enough to keep you out of the actual water?
Yes, unless there were a flood or heavy rain. Otherwise, they seemed to cope.
Now, the trench wasn't straight, was it? Was it how?
The trench was so many yards, and then it took a turn in to your left or right. And then it continued a yard or two, and then it took another turning. The idea being that if a shell dropped in a white part, you had each side of it and a thick wall of sandbags and soil to prevent that blast carrying through along the trench, and also it was a safeguard against Germans getting in the trench. You could pull down certain wire which was laid there in the form of a trap, drop it on the trench so the German couldn't come through, and you could contain him with bombing from that side.
Where was this wire trap put?
It was put just on the top of the trench.
And just pulled down into the...
Yeah, pull it down. And it stopped bombing raid.
And one of those was at each...
Every so far there'd be one, yes.
How wide was the trench? We didn't pick that up.
Well, a communication trench is kept narrow. But the trench you were actually in the front, you had to have it so that you could pass one another. And also, you could pass up boxes of ammunition, or boxes of bombs, and you could get under the firing step.
So more than a yard?
Oh yes, it would probably be probably 2 yards in some areas. But you kept it narrow in the where you had your blocks, with no deep dugouts.
I'm coming on to dugouts, yeah. The communication trenches, how often were they along the line?
Whenever it was convenient to make use of, according to the lie of the land. You wouldn't have one where the Germans had observation on it, because it simply ranged guns on it and you could never use it. But you'd have one which was probably in a depression, out of view of the German observation post.
And how wide were they? You say they were narrower.
They were just sufficient for you to get through and also carry a man on a stretcher.
So how wide would you put that? 3 or 4 foot?
Yes, not much more. Of course, eventually they'd start falling in and in parts would be wider.
So they'd zigzag?
Yes, they didn't go straight. They moved from one site to another.
What barbed wire, besides the traps or the things that you pulled down to block a trench, what barbed wire defences did you have in front of the...
There were wooden posts driven in, and you used to have a wooden hammer and sandbags folded together and put on top of the post, and somebody would have to hold it, and then the man would have to drive it in. If you didn't adopt some method of stopping the noise, the Germans would hear you and open up with machine guns. Probably cause a lot of casualties.
How wide were the... I'll come back to wiring parties, actually. That's interesting. How wide were the defences in front of you?
Well, there could be anything up to 20 feet. All wire. So we used to tie empty cans on. But if any German came along and... during the daytime, when he thought you weren't on the watch, of course, if he started cutting wire, those cans would just start rattling. It gave you a little warning.
How deep was the German wire?
Deeper in some places, very deep.
Now, moving on to dugouts, did you have any dugouts at all? You said you didn't have deep ones, but did you have any at all, or any cubby holes, or...
We had cubby holes, that was all, and some places we used to keep ammunition in, and trench stores which had to be handed over to a battalion who relieved you. So the biggest part at time, whatever the weather was like, you was out in the open.
What were the cubby holes? How deep were they? Where were they built into?
They were built into the side of the trench facing the Germans and just scooped out. And just enough to lie down in. It'd be like that. And because the top, you'd have to make sure it wasn't going to collapse on you.
When you say lie down, you mean lie down sideways, parallel to the trench? Not at right angles to the trench.
Lie down with your back to the Germans, or... because you were quicker to get out that way. If instead of being the other way, you'd have had to turn over.
So it'd only be 2 or 3 feet in?
That was, it wasn't that sometimes.
And would you try and block off the front using your ground sheet or a blanket or anything, or would you just be open to the...
You could use your ground sheet to block it off if you wanted some dark period over your eyes. But otherwise, he could find probably a firing step was as good as anywhere to get into a corner with your back by your sentry and sleep that way.
Did you bother to build these cubby holes, or would you just take them over? Or
they were generally there, and of course in time they collapsed and they had to build others.
How were they allocated when you arrived?
None at all. You just, the officers of course had places allocated to them, and your sergeants were down.
Were they just cubby holes as well?
No, some of them had better built shelters.
I'll come to that. But you say that you just, it was just besides the officers and sergeants, it was just first come, first serve?
More or less, yes. You didn't bother. I mean, a chap might be going on sentry and you could take his place.
And you say the sergeants and officers had proper shelters or better shelters. What were they
well,
like?
Well, you see, you had your company headquarters, which were further back than the front line, probably. And then you had your battalion headquarters further back still. So they could probably be in a cellar. Or some other place which was comfortable. Below ground.
So your company officers, they didn't live in the front line with you?
No, they'd be at company headquarters, but they'd be there with you. They'd come round. They were always round.
So they slept in the when they did sleep or rested in the reserve lines or support lines.
Yes.
But they were actually, they spent the day in the front line with you, or the night.
Well, always around night time. Daytime, you see, they're always within call, more or less. Company runner and soon fights them.
What did you do with your kit? Did you leave them in your cubby hole or just stacked up somewhere? Or
You kept on all your equipment apart from your pack and your container with food. You had your everything else with you.
And where would you put them?
Corner of a trench, firing step.
Now, looking at the rations, how did you get your rations? And how did?
Before you set off for the trenches, you were given generally 3 days' supplies of rations. There'd be bully beef. There'd be might be some pork and beans. There'd be some butter in a tin. There'd be tea and sugar. There'd be some McConaughey. Tickler's jam. Whichever label was on tasted the same. And that would be shared between so many of you to carry a section, probably. And you'd each carry so much, and they'd give you biscuits and happen to a loaf of bread to share about 5 or 6 of you. And then you had your water bottle filled, water. You had your mess tin for cooking your meal in. And if you were being told what to do, you had quite a lot of dry splinter wood with you for a fire to make a hot drink.
So once you were in the line, you didn't get any more rations brought up?
No, not until...
Not at this time?
No, until the period was when you went back then for 2 days in the reserve trench.
So then you were in the front line for 3 days?
Sometimes 5.
And you were just given the food to take up with you at that time?
Yes, to keep you... That was to last you the time you were there.
What did you think of this food, the bully and the McConaughey's, the rest of it?
It tasted good. You were out in the open all the time. Naturally. But you also had a reserve tin of bully beef and tea and sugar carried in the corner of your jacket here. And some biscuits. And some biscuits. Which was supposed to last you 24 hours in
emergency.
Your
emergency ration.
Emergency ration, you had that. So, actually...
How was your food issued then? You carried it up between you, or would you then get it doled out day by day, or were you just giving
your... We all got together and shared what was so many in a tin and so on, so on. You agreed amongst yourselves, and some people liked something and some didn't. So it worked out all right. Then you made a little fire at the bottom of the trench, put your mess tin on and got your water boiling, and they gave you a tin of condensed milk or something, liquid milk. then you could make yourself hot drink in the morning, but you had to be sure that when you put a fire on, there were no smoke. As soon as the smoke, if you made any, you'd get a shell.
When would you decide to eat? Was it your own choice? Or
his own choice. Eat when you thought fit. You could have it after stand down in the morning, and you could have another one at...
But you did. You made your own decisions.
You had to arrange between you what that if they'd already shared everything out, you could eat when you wanted.
What about water? You just seem to have this one water bottle. Was that all you had for the 3 to 5 days?
No, we carried up those tins, petrol tins. So many were carried up, so many for headquarters, so many for, you see, and...
How was that doled out?
Well, we shared it between us. So actually, if you could survive on a pint or a pint and a half of water a day, you could manage. But the one thing about the water in the petrol tins, you'd had inward explosions. Belching. Terrible stuff. And sometimes there were some lime or something in, and that upset your stomach by causing a lot of wind. So, and you didn't go in the shell hole at night and find water, because you never knew what at the bottom of it. So you had to rely on the water which the transport brought up from various places back of the mine.
Could you manage on a pint and a half?
Yes, we had to.
Did you feel thirsty all the time, or did you just get...
If there'd been a lot of bombardment and shells explosion, the fumes and that made you very dry.
What about any other rations? Did you get a rum ration? Or you wouldn't probably take it, but...
There was a rum ration provided in the morning, and also those cigarettes had been given to you. And...
What did you do with your issues?
I gave them away.
Could you give your rum away? Were you allowed to pass that on, or did you just not take it?
I passed it on.
So you gave...
You went with a mess tin and it were doled out. And
they didn't watch you drink it then?
No. No, there were no... No, you carried it away and... Probably, you know, same as a chap, a married man I knew, Carl Reynolds, it's 6 children, and I thought he needed it, so I gave it to him.
Were there any people who had too much rum? I mean, more than one person giving them it?
No, I never saw anything of that, no.
You were never tempted to drink it yourself then?
No.
What about cigarettes? Would you take your cigarette ration?
Yes, I took those and changed them for a bar of chocolate, unsweetened chocolate, or whatever they'd bought back in the canteen and brought up, or something like that. It was like a barter system. Some chaps used to get as many cigarettes as they could and use it by selling them so much each. And make quite a good profit out of it, but they had the trouble of carrying them. And if it were wet conditions, I might lose a lot.
Were there any other special rations you got?
No.
Now, the munitions you needed, the ammunition and bombs, you carried all them up with you, or were they part of these trench stores?
There were trench stores, but you had to go and meet the transport people when it were dark. Your own transport, whoever they were, bringing it up. Royal Engineers would be bringing sandbags and wire and posts and all that. You had to go and meet these people at a certain place and carry the goods back to wherever they were required and keep the ammunition ready so you weren't short.
Would you not pick up food at the same time on this?
After 3 days you had your company transport had arranged to be at a certain place at a certain time, which was known. And there they'd hand over the rations to you, sandbags, all sealed. And you had to carry those then back to the company headquarters where they were taken charge of, and then they were then doled out from there.
You got topped up after that 3 days. What were these trench stores?
There'd be sandbags, bombs, and 303 ammunition.
So you had a basic reserve in the trench?
Yes, you always had it, so that you had always had it actually in the trench with you.
How did your uniform stand up to trench warfare?
Very well. Very well indeed. It was warm, and it stood quite a lot of rain, providing you took some precautions, put your ground sheet over you and stand up so it didn't run onto your knees. Your putties would stand quite a lot, and your boots would as well. So
you didn't need them replacing?
No, every so often you had they had a battalion cobbler. You'd go there, and if it needed anything, you'd look at them, and you went in turn, of course. And whatever repairs were necessary was told to the cobbler, someone who knew all about these things, and he would put the necessary studs in and all that.
Right. What about looking at sort of the health and sanitation of trench warfare, you know, how you got on with that? What did they do about latrines in the front line, we're thinking of here?
There was one dug pit about 6 feet down in a special enclosure, and there was a pole across, two cross pieces to hold it, and you sat on the pole, and when you'd moved away, or just before, you threw soil on. And then the company...
And they had one of these just behind the front lines?
In the front line itself. And that was where a lot of chaps were killed. Because when they went there, they stretched up and taken their equipment off. And the German snipers, who were very active, had an idea where to look. And of course they'd watch all day long. And if you were a tall man and didn't take precautions, he'd only got it through here. So
it wasn't quite deep enough there then? But
no, you see, you didn't put it too deep because it'd be flooded. The water didn't. And then it was covered with, every so often there was lime, I think, thrown over it, and then when it was full, you had to find another spot.
What did they do for paper and things like that?
You hadn't any. Use newspaper or grass or whatever you could get hold of. Nothing you could do about it.
What about washing? Was there any chance to wash or keep clean in the front line, or was there just no water for it?
There was nothing. You never washed from the time you went in until you got back in the reserve. Your hands might have been in all sorts of things that you couldn't wash.
How did that affect you when you were eating? Did you, or were you just used to it?
You got used to it. You didn't bother. There were other things more to bother about than dirty hands.
What did you do with all the rubbish of trench life?
We collected it and buried it in a shell hole at the back. And some units, and others didn't seem to bother, and they threw the empty tins over the wire, thinking to deteriorate. Well, of course, that's where you got your rats. We were instructed and always told to bury your rubbish. Match stalks or anything at all, the trench had to be kept clean. And it was the walk round to see if it was.
So you'd be
it paid off, did that, of course.
You'd be punished if you... If you urinated in the trench or anything, you'd have to use a latrine, would you?
Yes, you mustn't use. I mean, because it wouldn't be very pleasant if a lot used it, would it? The smell and the overpowering.
So they were strict about that and yes, about rubbish disposal.
Yes, that was.
And you felt other battalions didn't.
Well, there was when we went to the original frontline trench at Yeeps. There were quite a lot of empty tins had been thrown over. And to counteract that, we tried to bury what we could, because there were rats roaming around there at night, feeding into the tins. So what I did, on instructions, was to get some pork out of the tin of beans, which you didn't eat. It was just skin and a thick lump of pork. Stick it at the end of your bayonet when you were on sentry. Look towards the German lines, and then when you heard any rats coming to nibble, just pull your trigger, and if you were fortunate, you killed the rat and happened it a German. And that was, of course, you couldn't do it too often, because if you did, you'd just attract German machine gun fire. They'd watch for the flash, probably, or...
So how often would you do that, a night or a week, or...?
Happen only once a night. Happen some nights, never. Because by doing that, the Germans would think there were a new unit in the line, that it was a different way than what they'd been used to.